Football Weekly. Saturday's FA Cup final. Louis Saha with the scorching start, but Chelsea get a golden exit from their goose. As the Dutchman departs, it's hello Carlo Ancelotti at the bridge. What's he got up his sleeve, apart from rather chubby forearms? Your pod inquires. Elsewhere, there's all the season-ending action around the continent. A wine fan's treat in France with Blanc and Bordeaux on top of the French table. A goal-tastic weekend in Serie A and in Spain, whoops Betis, as Frank Spencer would say. All that, plus your post, the start of the transfer window, Sean's trip to the football writer's dinner, and a nod to the upcoming internationals in today's Football Weekly. Right, now, joining us today on Football Weekly, Sean Ingle.
Hi, James.
Hi, Sean. Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. I'm Paul Doyle.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, all right then. Yeah, we all have a nice weekend. Glorious sunshine down on Earth.
I got slightly burnt on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
When I was busy not watching the FA Cup final.
Right. Some of us were in the office, some of us were working, James.
I was working.
I have to say, it was very unfair on Satanta to have you stood next to Stan Collymore on the pitch. I mean, couldn't they have provided you with some extra foam cushioning for your shoes? Because he's about 6'7" and you're about 5'2". But I thought you did a really good job.
Thanks, Sean. Right, okay. Did you enjoy the final, Sean?
I did. Well, it was much better than I thought it was going to be, I think. But you always had the feeling that once Drogba had equalised Sahar's early strike, that it was only going to be one winner and Chelsea were just simply too big and too strong. If Everton had scored late on, I wonder what would have happened with Chelsea's third goal that wasn't given, that was clearly over the line. Once again, you know, I know I keep going on about this, it's just ridiculous we don't have some sort of video replays for instance like that at the very least.
You'll be delighted to know, this just in from the Bahamas, that FIFA have announced that they're going to be using five officials. They're going to be using two extra sideline officials for next year's Europa League.
I just think that's pathetic and useless. Why not just have one extra official in the stands with a video camera that could quickly look at these things?
I think I've said before in the pod, GAA matches, they have an umpire on each post and they decide whether a ball has gone over the bar for a point or not, and they get things wrong. So, you know, you need technology. Either have technology or just leave it the way it is. But this business of getting in extra officials to man the sidelines sounds ridiculous.
It's funny they're having the FIFA meeting in the Bahamas, isn't it? You know, it's.
I'm sure there's a very good reason for it. Gus Hiddink leaving. There's some talk that Michael Essien might be as well, but we'll come to that later on. Gus Hiddink returning that evening to Russia, as Paul Hayward's column had it, to Russia with love. In this case, which was very nicely done. And in his place, it's become official now, Carlo...
Technically, he went to Holland.
Did he?
Yeah, because he went to visit his dad.
I thought he...
Then he went to Russia.
Oh, right, for the Russian Cup final.
But that's too hot. To Russia with love via Holland is not as catchy.
Not
for
as
the headline
catchy.
Writers.
Right, okay, but anyway, Carlo Ancelotti's in. Fresh from a 2-0 victory in Florence in his final game with Milan, which secured them third place in Serie A and thus a direct entry into the Champions League. What do you reckon? Is this Scolari part two?
Quite possibly. I mean, at the Football Writers' Dinner, which we might come to later, I was chatting to a fair few journalists who all seemed to think that Hiddink would be back at Chelsea in some role by November. And once the qualification...
By November?
Once the qualification for the World Cup is out of the way and Russia are hopefully through, they think that Hiddink will get some sort of upstairs role. And you can easily see if Chelsea make a slow starts of the season, they lose a couple of big games, it may well be that Hiddink is back in charge, you know, come the new year.
Well, he has actually retained an upstairs role already. He's been kept on as technical advisor.
Has he? Yeah. Instead officially within the Chelsea setup?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I mean, Ancelotti's a lovely bloke and I wish him the best, but I must admit, although, you know, I've defended him with when Kevin's been off on his anti Milan rants in the past, but I do have my doubts about this. On the plus side, he's got that incredible Champions League record, which is something that supposedly Abramovich is desperate to improve Chelsea's record in, and arguably done without substantial investment. He's good with star players. He's a good company man as well. Never kicks up a fuss, unlike, you know, one or two others have been.
It just seems a strange appointment to me that Abramovich famously wants a team that plays, you know, swashbuckling, attractive football. Mm. Is he going to get that from Ancelotti?
At times he will, when the team can be bothered. But this is my feeling about Ancelotti, is that he's too kind of laid back to push the team when the team
aren't up for it themselves. I mean, too many times the team switched off on his watch the Deportivo game when they were 4-1 up from the first leg and still managed to lose 4-2 and get knocked out of the Champions League. Clearly Istanbul as well. But then countless times in the league when they got a good run together and suddenly they were about to challenge again for the title, they draw at home with nobody or lose at home with some bottom-of-the-table team just because the players weren't up for it. So there's that.
I see in today's paper as well that his number two, John Terry, has already been advising him what players he should go out and buy and what Chelsea need to do.
Who is he recommended?
David Villa, and basically any of the big players that become available around Europe. You know, he said we have to be getting in these marquee
no
signings.
Defenders.
Villa is the only one I remember. In particular, that I don't think he recommended any centre halves.
No. Also regarding Ancelotti, there's the fact that he doesn't speak English. I mean, he might be able to get by.
He wasn't too bad. There was a press conference today he gave to Chelsea Television. Well, he didn't sound.
I thought we'd all decided, though, that after, say, Scolari went, that one of the things that engenders this kind of split between manager and players is the fact that you're not able to convincingly and get your point across. If you're not comfortable speaking to players.
One exception to that, at least. I mean, first of all, Claudio Ranieri did reasonably well there with minimal English. Yeah. But also, for instance, Giovanni Trapattoni at Ireland has engendered a brilliant bond with the players, despite not being able to communicate them verbally particularly well. But as I said, the bond between them is extraordinary because he just exudes charisma and knowledge somehow through elaborate gesticulations and whatnot. Oh. I don't know. Ancelotti probably isn't that type.
Ancelotti is an absolute smashing bloke. Very genial. Seems ruffled.
We talked earlier and you said he was a bit of a joker. I mean, are we likely to have sort of DP-ing players, jockstraps?
No, he's
that?
More of a kind of will chuckle away to himself and make the odd sarcastic reply in press conferences. It's all a bit of a game to him. And he clearly has other priorities in life, many of them culinary-based. So that's all terrific. I do worry a little bit with him that he's not necessarily the best judge of players in the world. Everybody trots out the Pirlo thing. He himself admits that it was Pirlo's idea that he play back in that position. And he is the man who sold for buttons one of the great players of the decade, Thierry Henry. He didn't know what to do with him at Juventus, where for all his great record at Milan, his record at Juventus was really poor. Should be an interesting one. I personally don't hold out a huge amount of optimism for Ancelotti, but I stand ready to be corrected about that next season. What are you writing down, Sean?
No. I was just making a few notes. But one of our, I had a tweet from one of our listeners asking about Carlo Ancelotti had been checking out the restaurants in London, and that was one of the reasons he based his decision on.
I think it's fair to say that Carlo, and I'll reuse an old joke here, will have a lot on his plate in every sense. When he takes over at Chelsea. This just in, Leonardo is Ancelotti's replacement, of course, and that Tassotti, who's been the kind of number two under Ancelotti, is going to stay on with Leonardo and keep that whole thing going. And there's some talk here that the big transfer targets are going to be Adebayor, who famously compared Milan to Beyonce, which, you know, feel free to make your own little quips about, and Michael Essien. Who, I can't imagine how that deal would go through unless it was some part exchange for Andrea Pirlo, which, again, is a strange one. Is it worth us wasting our breath on these transfer rumours?
Well, I would be amazed if Chelsea got rid of Michael Essien, who arguably is the best midfielder in the world right now.
Why did he go off in the FA Cup final?
He wasn't playing particularly well.
Right, OK.
I think he signed a new contract with Chelsea just a few months ago.
Right.
I don't imagine Milan would be able to offer him better money than Chelsea. And are even better sporting prospects. So unless he has a particular attraction to the city of Milan, I don't see why he'd go there.
And Milan's a bit of a dump, really, isn't it, compared
to... It's not a dump at all. If we were sitting... Imagine that our Milanese counterparts there on Football City Manali, or whatever it's called, are probably saying, you know, Chelsea's a bit of a dump.
Huge swathes of London are a dump, yeah.
Huge swathes
exactly.
of London are quite literally a dump.
I'll rephrase that. Milan isn't as nice a city as many of the other cities in
Italy. Depends what you want from a city. It is the most metropolitan, and most modern, most cosmopolitan of Italy's cities. If you're used to a more a vita mondano, you might say that it's the best city in Italy to go to. It's the most European.
Yeah. I don't know Michael Essien very well, but from what I've seen in the London papers, what he wants from a city is lots of attractive women.
Right.
And I would imagine there are no shortage of them in Milan.
Yes. I think that a football player lives very, very comfortably in Milan. It's testified.
And I would imagine also that the amount of tax a footballer would have to pay in Milan would be a lot less than in
Italian taxes are high, actually. It's interesting that English taxes are now going to be approaching the same level. But Italian taxes are traditionally about 50% for top-level earners.
So it's similar to the UK now, but also we've got to remember that the pound has deteriorated quite fast against the euro, so it might make more sense for big-name players to go abroad than they would have been a year or two ago.
All right. All quite possible. Anyway, there you go. Big changes at Chelsea and big changes at Milan, and lots more on the way as the summer progresses. We, in a second or two, will be hearing from Sid Lowe in Spain, so stick around. Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello.
Hi, Sid. You answered promptly today.
I answered very promptly, didn't I?
Right. You've already done your business with Chappers, have you, today?
No. I did that. I don't know if I did that before or after I spoke to you last time.
I think you did it before when we were ringing and ringing and ringing, getting your answering machine. Dave Knott posts in, breaking the news to a shocked Guardian sports desk. Did anyone else notice that the transfer of the season could be taking place under our very noses? Sid Lowe, the R man in Madrid, did not lose his phone, but was brazenly courting the opposition in the form of Chappers Football Pools podcast. Brazenly flirting, Sid, with
Cat
Graham
up.
Pohl. I
Cat.
Felt ill. Scoff, Sid Lowe's phone ringing unanswered for an extraordinary length of time on last Football Weekly. Could it be he was on the phone to rival... Yes, it could. Yeah. I think he should be suspended, says Scoff, for two pods. I have to say, Dave Knott and Scoff, you two were both listening to this bloody podcast, so you're equally in the dock as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, Sid, explain.
There's nothing to explain, is there?
There is. You've been seeing Chappers behind our back.
Chappers of all people.
It's the ultimate betrayal.
It is.
Unless you'd been seeing Tim Lovejoy behind our back.
No, I draw the line at some things.
Right. Okay, well, that's nice to know. And anything else we should know, Sid?
No, as far as I'm aware. There's all sorts of things to know from Spain. If you mean, if you mean about me or about the Spanish League, then there's plenty to know about the Spanish League this weekend.
All right, then we'll shift the discussion onto the Spanish League. Sounds a little bit uncomfortable there, doesn't it? Now, Atletico just got into the Champions League with Barcelona, Real and Sevilla. Oh, Diego Forlán, 32 goals in the league.
32 goals, top scorer in Spain, obviously ahead of Samuel Eto'o and David Villa. I think Eto'o finished on 30, David Villa on 28. Eto'o will be kicking himself for those missed penalties because that would have been enough. Three missed penalties this season would have been enough to make him top scorer. And not only that, but Diego Forlán is the golden boot winner, Europe's top scorer, not actually their top scorer, of course, but adding in the coefficient, he's their top scorer. He's beaten some Austrian geezer, whose name, I must confess, escapes me, and he will be European golden boot.
Okay, where's he off to? Is he on the way to Man City or St. Diego Forlán?
No, I don't think he's on his way to Man City. I think there are far, far bigger clubs interested in him. I think Barcelona is a genuine possibility, although, of course, Atletico Madrid want a little bit too much money. Forlán was quite interesting after the game because he was asked about, you know, whether he'll stay, and in all the euphoria of them getting the Champions League, everybody expected him to just say yes. And he sort of said yes, but as the Spanish phrase goes, he said yes with the small mouth. He was kind of saying, well, you know, it depends. If conditions are the same as they are, or maybe even a bit better than this year, then there's no reason why I shouldn't stay, but of course I've got ambitions, and if an offer came in and it was good for the club, then of course it would be good for everyone. I think he was very much saying, hang on a minute, someone comes with big money, I'm off.
A couple of other little transfer stories. Sport, I read, say that there's already a deal for Real Madrid to take Xavi Alonso from Liverpool and possibly send Gabriel Heinz the other way, so Heinz gets his long-awaited move to Anfield. Is that true, Sid, is it?
It is not true that there is a deal in place to take Xavi Alonso to Real Madrid. It's not true that there's a pre-contract agreement at the moment between Xavi Alonso and those clubs. But that's not to say Real Madrid in this case. That's not to say it won't happen. My feeling is that it will happen. Xavi Alonso's agent has admitted that he met Rafa Benitez and he doesn't want to talk about the contents of that conversation. I think that there's still a very, very good chance of Xavi Alonso being amongst the signings at Real Madrid.
Sid, can you talk us a bit about the relegation dogfight? I was watching it yesterday, and Osasuna somehow haven't beaten Barcelona and Real Madrid have survived.
Yeah, well, the first thing to say is somehow beaten Barcelona and Real Madrid. Of course, they beat Barcelona last week when they rested all of their players ahead of the Champions League. They beat Madrid this week when Real Madrid were just about to run off their best ever run at the end of the season. Five successive defeats. their worst run in history. And Osasuna have played two teams that weren't up for it. And other clubs, I think they haven't yet, because still the shock is kind of still in the system. But I think Betis will start to talk over the next few weeks about, hang on a minute, the competition was adulterated by the fact that Osasuna played two teams with absolutely nothing to play for at the back end of the season, two teams that should, under normal circumstances, have absolutely walloped them. It was a really fascinating afternoon. Five teams could have gone down. In the end, the team that went down is Betis. This is a team that spent over €40 million on players this year, who at the start of the season, their president said, we've built the best squad in our history. And they've gone down. It's a Newcastle moment, except, of course, Newcastle are not a big club, and Betis are. Betis have 40,000 members. It's less than 5 years since they were in the Champions League and won the Copa del Rey.
Now, around the rest of this fine continent, Bremen won the German Cup, beating Bayer Leverkusen. Porto had their sixth domestic double, winning the Portuguese Cup. Don't know who that was against this year. Besiktas! You remember how Sivasspor were going to win the Turkish thing? Yeah, but they didn't. Besiktas won it. Their first time since 7 years. Barry, are you yawning or have you got a question about that?
Sorry, I was yawning.
All right, okay. Scotland! Rangers did their double. Yeah, okay, Scottish Cup.
Apparently, and I didn't see this game, yeah, but I believe Falkirk were very unlucky not to beat Rangers, that they were the better side throughout, but still contrived to lose 1-0.
Right, okay. Apparently so.
Blank looks from everyone. I don't think anyone watched it.
Right. CSKA Moscow, watched, of course, by Gus Hiddink, won the Russian Cup, which is a great triumph for CSKA Moscow's manager, who is, of course, Zico, who I now see linked to QPR. Sean, any?
Everyone is linked.
Everyone's linked to QPR. And speaking of blank looks, hey, Girondin de Bordeaux. They held their nerve to secure their first Ligue 1 title in, is it a decade?
Yeah, since 1999. Yeah. And right, they held their nerve in some style. In fact, in record-breaking style, because they had the best ever run-in in French football history. They won their last 11 matches.
Wow.
Which was pretty splendid run, given that Marseille were breathing down their neck for most of the time, well, right up until the last day. And the denouement was particularly interesting, because they had to get at least a point at Caen, which,
right,
as well as fighting relegation themselves, were are Bordeaux's bête noire,
are they?
As they say in English. Yeah, they are.
I could see that Jimbo was there trying to jump in and ask if there's a French word for denouement. Yeah. You were, weren't you?
And then he said bête noire. He was taunting me. Yeah.
Yeah, Bordeaux previously had only ever got 2 points in their entire history at Caen, and last season lost their 5-0. Marseille won 4-0 at home to Rennes, so Bordeaux definitely did need at least a point, you know. It was 0-0 at half time. They were a bit nervy, actually, Bordeaux, and Caen could have had a penalty. But then the second half, they won 1-0 thanks to a goal from not Johan Gourcuff, but the other
Gouffran,
the yo-yo attack, yeah, Gouffran, who just left Caen last year, and who, of course, refused to celebrate the goal. Afterwards, of course, Bordeaux did celebrate. And one of the great things about French TV is they have more access than over here. And you can see into the dressing rooms at the end of the game. So you had the camera focusing on the Caen dressing room after the game, and all the players were devastated and in tears and just generally looking like they were at a funeral. But next door, you could hear the sounds of Campione, Campione, as Bordeaux were celebrating wildly, which really must have rubbed it in. The French authorities didn't present them with the trophy because they thought that would be a bit too much.
So
they were awarded it yesterday in Bordeaux, in this street, open street party type scenario.
Nice.
But it was a very good performance by Bordeaux and by Laurent Blanc.
Caen went down, Le Havre went down, and eight times champion Nantes
went straight back down as well. Yeah, and Alain Perrin saved Saint-Étienne on the last day.
Hooray! And Paris Saint-Germain missed out on a Europa League spot, and Toulouse and Lille went into the Europa League. And so it's Marseille, Bordeaux and
Lyon
in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Just very quickly, I know France are playing Nigeria tomorrow night. Dominic is still there. What's the mood in the French camp like ahead of that game?
Well, Dominic is still incredibly unpopular. And actually, we mentioned Laurent Blanc. Everyone in France pretty much wants him to be the next France boss. There is a rumour, which Blanc has refused to deny, that he has a clause in his contract that allows him to leave after in 2010, in other words, after the World Cup, when, unless France do something extraordinary, you have to think Dominic is going to be sacked. But however, I think that Blanc will also be monitored by a lot of top clubs around Europe.
Has he not just signed a new deal?
He signed a new deal around January, yeah. But apparently, as I say, it's reported that there is a clause in that allows him to talk to, you know, specified suitors. So perhaps the France national team is one of them, and a big foreign club. Because, I mean, he stated just this week that his ideal career path is to begin in France, have success there, then coach abroad, and then come back and manage the national team.
Right, well, there's talk of Juventus being interested, Manchester United as well being linked.
Well, Ferguson wanted him to be his assistant when Carlos Queiroz left, and they're actually very good friends. You know? They talk regularly on the phone, and he himself has said that he likes the Anglo-Saxon model of management, i.e. where you have a lot of control over transfers. So he will move on from Bordeaux sooner or later. Judging by the start he's made to his career, won the League Cup, the French equivalent of the Charity Shield, and the title.
Be interesting to see which big club draws a blank. Italy. We mentioned before that Milan secured third place. Fiorentina, who got beaten 2-0 at their Artemio Franchi Stadium, finished fourth, so they go into the Champions League alongside, well, if they can get through the qualifiers, where they will then join Milan and Juventus. And Inter Torino got relegated along with Regina and Lecce. Carlo Ancelotti leaving, a whole load of other managers leaving. Walter Zenger leaving Catania after a brilliant season and a half there.
Why is he leaving?
I think because he will be taking over at Lazio. That's the informed view, which is a bigger stage with not necessarily much deeper pockets, but, you know, a bit more potential.
While we're talking Italy, you shed some light on this extraordinary Roberto Mancini story linking him with Sunderland. He seemed to be very keen until Sunderland said, we know nothing about it.
Well, it is an extraordinary story, isn't it?
He seems to have appointed himself Sunderland manager.
I think that's a little bit unfair. There was this quote from him made to the Italian Sky saying he was honoured to be offered a deal, which was certainly news to both his agent and Sunderland themselves. He said there'd been no such offer.
Well, it sounded to me like he'd been told Sunderland were interested and was saying, oh, well, I'd love, you know, it's an honour to be linked to a club like that. And it somehow seems to have been come out of the wash reading like, I'm delighted to be getting the Sunderland job, which obviously he isn't.
No, well, he might be, you know. Roberto Mancini's an interesting fellow because he is a desperately Italian man. He's not... You couldn't mistake him for a Macam or anything. You'd pass him on the street. However, he is interested almost to the point of obsession, I would say, with the minutiae of English football. And the grittier, the better. His favourite kit for years was the Blackburn kit. He went, of course, to play at Leicester. And it really enjoyed his time there.
How do you know his favourite kit for years was the Blackburn?
Because that's what it was. He wanted to get Sampdoria playing in the... In fact, I think they did unveil a second or third strip that was based on Blackburn Rovers, because he absolutely loves English football. He hasn't been working for a year, so that will only up his appetite for a return to the game. And he might feel that Sunderland, with an extremely large wad of cash to spend from Ellis Short, would be an interesting place.
Well, it looks like Steve Bruce is going to go there. But if Tony Pulis, for some reason, heads off, you know, you think, you know, he might be that spit and sawdust place like Stoke might be.
Right up Roberto Mancini's street, yeah. So I think it was just one of those things in which he was being polite and it got a little bit taken out of context. But yeah, curious. It's not the first place I'd think of Roberto Mancini, but then where would you think of Roberto Mancini?
He could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
He could do a lot better.
Potentially big club. Huge potential.
This guy has won the Italian championship twice and he hasn't worked for you. It's strange. It's almost like it's like when you came back from Italy, James, having worked in Football Italia for the next number of years. Everyone thought you were brilliant, but you know, the only place you were basically scratching for bobbins, weren't you? I mean,
you are Sunderland, aren't you? This is Sunderland, aren't you?
Surely.
You're Ellis Short. And I was. Thanks. I had to put too much perspective on that, I think.
Possibly. I think the Cal Vorderman vehicle came along, didn't it?
Yes. And then left again at high speed. No, but anyway, returning to the subject of Roberto Mancini, the thing is about his titles with Inter, is everyone goes, oh yeah, but they were handed one title, oh yeah, but the next year everybody else had points deductions or Juve weren't even in the league, and then everyone had way less money than he had to spend, and he only just crept over the line. Remember, Inter very nearly blew the title on the last day of last season. So I think Roberto Mancini's standing as a manager has been hurt rather than enhanced by his successes at Inter. Or by his time, I should say, at Inter. It is worth remembering that he did an absolutely brilliant job before that with Lazio, in somewhat more straitened circumstances. And possibly what this means is that he needs to have a little bit more adversity to deal with, that it was just too comfortable for him at Inter. But, you know, it happens that somebody doesn't fit in one place and does brilliantly in another. There you go.
What's his favourite kit now?
I don't know, actually. I haven't had the pleasure of speaking to Roberto in a year or two. So there you go. Right, okay. That's it for part two, I suspect. Your posts, a bit of international news, and a little bit of Sean hobnobbing will be coming up right after this. Welcome back. A post or two, bric-a-brac. Laughing his head off, has just had a vision of Phil Brown's house, leopard skin rugs, Athena prints on the wall, sunken bathtub, four-poster bed with a mirror on the ceiling, pole dancing pole in the middle of the living room, Spandau Ballet, Duran Duran CDs in the music collection, dress for success on the bookshelf, bottles of Ritz and Pernod in the drinks cabinet, because lasses like... Oh, you do the accent. Lasses like that stuff.
I can't do his accent.
All right. Well,
tiger skin rugs, surely.
What did I say?
Not leopard skin.
All right, okay. Anyway, sorry. Lasses like that stuff. A classy lass will drink Malibu and pineapple. I'm not even going to attempt the accent. Brilliant stuff from Bric-a-Brac. Thank you for that. Ooh, Roger Palmer. I did enjoy your Marsman Chronicle, which was absolutely genius stuff as well, of the mysterious Marsman post that didn't feature the words David Beckham. And several posters went through it and read it several times to make sure it didn't say David Beckham backwards or anything like that, which, you know, it has happened in the past, probably. Lots of discussion, M. Meister, Roger Palmer, and no singing allowed on the Champions League and whether it's an evolution to changing times. I can't mention that in today's pod. Sean will go off on one. More posts later on the subject of egg poaching, so that anyone who's not interested can just switch off. If you want to post in with your best of the season, guardian.co.uk is the place. Slash football weekly is the place to do it. Just to finish off today, a little bit of international news. And first off, Sean Ingle, you've been off hobnobbing.
Well, there was a Football Writers Awards dinner on Friday night. Yep. It's football writers, but basically anyone involved in the game goes along. You know, Terry Venables was there. You know, didn't look quite as radioactive orange as he does on telly with his makeup, but he did have that stupid goatee of his. Fabio Capello was there, Stephen Gerrard was there, made a very humble and very good speech on accepting the award. Had lots of chats with David Pleat, who...
Fabio Capello was there and Stephen Gerrard was there. Who was it you were talking to?
David Pleat is the Guardian's football analyst, who was on the Guardian table, while Fabio and Stephen were in the top table.
Who else was on the Guardian's table?
All the football writers.
Not you, apparently, Barry.
No, it wasn't.
And Rafa Honigstein was there.
You there, daughter?
I wasn't there, no.
Rafa Honigstein was there.
Guillaume Balague was there, sent his regards to you, Jimbo.
Did he? Did he really?
No. Right. David Pleat was, among other things, talking about standing to be Member of Parliament for Luton South.
What?
Amazingly, I'm sure he was slightly tongue in chest, but Pleat is sure, as I'm sure most listeners
tongue
know.
Tongue in chest?
tongue in cheek.
This is David Pleat we're talking about. Yeah. Pleat, as I'm sure most listeners know, is a hero in the town after keeping Luton up in 82, 83.
Right.
And charging across Main Road in a sort of brownish orange suit, which you don't sort of see, the colour you don't see very much nowadays.
Right. He usually goes much slower across Main Roads.
Very good. Right. But it's got a kind of colour of violent gastroenteritis.
But he basically,
or Phil Brown, yeah. And he said that he promised to build a new stadium for the city and liberalise parking and so on.
You're joking.
I'm not joking. Right. But I think he was talking tongue in cheek, but he did have a very deep knowledge of all the lower leagues. He's very sweet on Leeds going up, which isn't that much
so
of a shock.
So many jokes just queuing up in my head, and I can't say any of them because he's a Guardian's football analyst.
And Oxford to go up in the conference, hopefully.
Excellent. All right. Italy have a friendly, actually, with Northern Ireland coming up on Saturday in Pisa. Where the atmosphere is anything but friendly at the moment. This is because Pisa got relegated after an absolutely disastrous end of the season and have gone down to the third division in Italy, the new Liga Pro, after which around 200 Pisa fans tried to smash down the door to the locker room, throwing rocks, bottles and road signs, and the riot police had to hold them back and etc. And they've now released a communique, the ultras of Pisa, saying... We are contrary to the idea of hosting in our stadium this gala of the Liga Calcio, the Italy game. We don't want the national team here. So there's a little bit of unrest ahead
of us. So I missed the start of that. Why don't they want them there?
Because they're upset about Pisa getting sent down and they don't see it as any fit time to have the national team rolling up and everybody pretending that everything's hunky-dory.
They don't want a peaceful action, do they?
They don't want any peace and quiet either.
Surely the authorities will lean on them.
Barry?
No, I have nothing.
Got enough?
Nothing.
All right, then.
Didn't I give you something beforehand I said you could use? Or was that some other gag? I've completely forgotten it.
Was it something about minding their P's and Q's? Was it?
No, it wasn't, but it was very funny.
Right, deep pan pizza. Pizza going down the deep pan. I don't know. Peas are going down the pan, could it be?
Peas in a pod.
Peas in a pod. That has been quite literally.
Yes.
This is fantastic. Stick around, listeners. We're only getting warmed up. Now, let's finish off today. Come back, Sean. By updating you on the state of play vis-a-vis poached eggs, because there have been some developments. Have you tried any of these recipes yet, Barry? Are you a poached egg man?
I love poached eggs, but no, I haven't tried
any. Do
anything.
You use an egg poacher?
No, I just use some vinegar in the water.
Right, you use the vortex method.
And the vortex, yes.
Right, okay. Now.
And a wooden spoon.
A slotted spoon, I think, apparently.
Well, I just use a wooden spoon, a long-handled wooden implement.
Right.
A spoon.
Right, okay.
to hold any wayward bits of egg, pull them back into the flock.
Right. This whole poaching business is really, really dividing the pod listenership in quite extraordinary fashion.
I think says more about the pod listenership than anything else.
First of all, the little pans you can use, you know, the egg poacher things, it's not a poacher. The egg apparently has to go in, according to one poster. Some people say...
What do people call it then? Because I'm a pan man.
Well, I think the act of poaching involves being immersed in water. Basically, what I've managed to understand is that if you're using the vortex method, then you really ought to be using a wok, right?
Well,
a frying pan makes a substantial difference. Basically, I'll abbreviate this in all enormity by saying that if you use a frying pan, crazy though that sounds, and you do all the business of dropping in your vinegar and whirling it, creating a vortex and stuff, it means that your egg comes out much less stringy. I haven't done this yet because I'm waiting for there to be a consensus before I actually venture into the kitchen with an egg. But apparently, if you use a frying pan, that makes it much less stringy.
See, I use a frying pan for scrambling my eggs.
Right. Gambetando suenos.
So you put water in the frying pan?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
What's wrong with a pot? It's just a normal pot.
All right.
So, Jimbo, don't you think there's a risk-reward ratio here? Because whenever you poach, the risk of the egg breaking up is quite high. Why don't people make an omelette? I mean, I had one this morning.
I could make you an omelette, sure.
No,
seriously, I have an omelette that...
My omelette this morning was asparagus, some cherry tomatoes, and some goat's cheese, and three eggs.
That sounds disgusting.
Right.
Beautiful.
Doesn't anyone have Weetabix anymore for breakfast?
Producer Ben's excited, quite literally excited by all this talk, and he's just weighed in saying, who is it that makes the best poached eggs? Oh, Ben wants to have a poached egg off with you. Jesse Plainmore says, my grandpa reckons the best way to poach an egg is to make sure not to wake the hen, but which is probably a good place to finish all this. Vortex method in a frying pan, it seems to be the most popular technique. I'm ready to try that, and before our next pod, I might do that. And meanwhile, Sean, you'll be posting your recipe for the omelette, and I'll post mine, and we'll see what listeners think, eh? That should get us.
I don't even know what's in James's yet, and I can already tell I'm going to prefer it to Shawnee's. I just don't like asparagus.
This pod is going the way of TV. Lots of junk about cooking and stuff.
Yeah, all right.
Can't have that.
In next week's pod, redo your urban garden. Right, and that's it. It probably has been it for some time now. So many, many thanks, listeners, those of you who are still around, and Hal. Sean Ingle, thanks very much for joining
us
today.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, Barry. Not many pods left to go now, eh?
No.
No?
It's great.
Paul Doyle?
Is Thursday the last one?
Well, it might be on Wednesday.
Right.
And then there's one next week. There might be two next week. It's all right. Two next week. Yeah, so there's plenty still to go.
I'd say after the last 15 minutes, I think the idea of doing more pods is really unwise.
Right.
The hell are we going to talk about? I'm bored with the eggs, I have to say.
Well, I haven't mentioned Gambetando Suenos is poached scrambled eggs.
Oh, God.
This is really taking things on to another level.
Can I swear?
All right. We're out of here. Thanks very much, and we'll speak to you later in the week.